Good morning, Pyle. Happy Friday, 7 o'clock. Jim Ann, who doesn't love cake?
Morning.
Donna Franson. Good morning, cake. How are you?
I am swell. How are you?
Swell?
Yes.
Getting a swell today.
Yes.
Excellent. All right, a busy Friday. We'll preview the Sunday Super Wild Card Weekend games coming up at 8 o'clock this morning.
Can I just say, I know that there's a Monday game and that, you know, it's more playoff. Do we have to call it Super Wild Card Weekend? All right.
Actually, got the call from Goodell.
Oh.
Told me. First, I booed him. And then said, look, you've got to call it Super Wild Card Weekend. I personally wish that the marketing people at the NFL, I mean, come on, it's the NFL.
Right.
Maybe craft a better name than Super Wild Card Weekend, but that's...
I mean, it's Wild Card Weekend. It's always been Wild Card Weekend.
But it's a Super Wild Card Weekend because we have two games tomorrow, three games Sunday, and the first ever Monday night Wild Card playoff game. So... it makes it Super Wild Card Weekend, I guess. I'm kind of with you on that. But I'm just going with what Scott Graham says in the promo from Westwood One.
Fair enough.
It's a Super Wild Card Weekend, and so that's what I'm going to go with today. All right. So Broncos coaching search continues. They interviewed Aaron Glenn, Detroit Lions defensive coordinator, who developed a really good reputation coaching the secondary in New Orleans, and then got the DC gig in Detroit, who seems like he's a pretty good leader of men, former Jets cornerback. Great.
Cool.
I don't want to poo-poo on Aaron Glenn. I don't.
No. But
I just don't think he's... so he's certainly not one of your front runners for this job. And go ahead.
I'll say this, and this might be me saying the quiet part out loud. This feels a little bit like a Rooney Rule compliance.
Yeah.
Not again. And look, this is an ever changing, ebb and flow, ongoing conversation about the need for minority representation in coaching.
Well, after David Culley got bagged in Houston, There's Mike Tomlin's it.
That's it.
And where Brian Flores is more than a Rooney Rule guy, they bring in Flores in to interview for the job. He's a contender for the job. Aaron Glenn, it's just a lack of experience that puts him in that category. And but then again, should we say Aaron Glenn? Can we say Aaron Glenn is less experienced than Kevin O'Connell?
Right.
Or Luke Getsy? I don't think it's fair to those guys.
No.
It's not fair to Aaron Glenn to say, well, you know, those guys are more intriguing because they're offensive coaches. Right?
Right. Which
then an Aaron Glenn who coaches on the defensive side of the football, who, like, experience, as I mentioned, is a defensive back.
Right.
Did a nice job with the Saints secondary. But Brian Flores has been an NFL head coach.
Right.
And was a defensive coordinator for a very successful Patriots football team.
And I know that this horse is long since dead, but, I mean, they should have never, Miami should never have fired him. I'm sorry. They just shouldn't have.
And, you know, the rumors are that Stephen Ross wanted them to tank to get Burrow, and that didn't work out. And then they got Tua, and it didn't work out to get Deshaun Watson. And there was supposedly a rift that developed between Tua and Brian Flores. And so when a coach takes a crap team and has them with a winning record and on the cusp of the playoffs back-to-back years, so you're going to fire that guy, huh? You're gonna fire that guy who turned your team around.
You've got all the momentum. What are you doing?
Stephen Ross.
Oh, Stephen.
Yeah.
Oh, Stephen.
So while there needs to be perhaps a better path for black coaches to become head coaches.
Right.
But you're probably accurate in saying that Aaron Glenn kind of, they have to, what, interview two, I believe? I think it's two minority coaches. That number sounds right. I'd have to look it up.
Yeah.
Might be three, but I think it's two that you have to interview. And, but there also comes a situation, too, where who's qualified?
Right.
You know, we should not knock Aaron Glenn. Well, that's, you know, for his lack of experience, without saying, well, you know, Luke Getsy and McConnell certainly are in that category as well.
Right.
Look, Brian Callahan, who's had experience in the Broncos staff in the past, Cincinnati offensive coordinator, has never been a head coach.
No.
I mean, it's probably not fair to say, and I rethought this the other day when I was talking about Aaron Glenn, maybe he's the least attractive candidate. I think part of it's because of where he's coming from.
Right.
He's coming from the Lions. The Lions defense wasn't a dumpster fire, but it wasn't great. There's a little bit of the Vance Joseph, you know, coordinator that, you know, was a coordinator for a very short period of time. You know, that unit wasn't great when he was in Miami.
Right.
And still got hired. And so maybe there's a little bit that's an unfair comparison with Aaron Glenn and Vance Joseph.
Maybe.
So, you know, if we're gonna criticize Aaron Glenn for a lack of head coaching experience, we got to say the same about the McConnell, Getsy, Nathaniel Hackett.
Most everybody not named Dan Quinn.
See, I don't think Hackett, was he an interim coach at one point?
I was looking it up the other day. I don't think he's been a head coach at all.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly Nathaniel Hackett, who they're supposed to interview today.
And the rumor is from his press conference that he wants to do like a stepbrothers routine with him and
Luke Getsy.
Thank you.
Yeah, the Getsy would come and be the OC and he'd be the head coach. Aaron Rodgers gave him glowing praise.
He did.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, who do we have in the Chick-fil-A breakfast team phone line?
First in the door, Joel today.
Joel, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
I'm doing fine.
Yeah, I feel the same way about Glenn, and it's a really lazy analogy if on my part, and I know other people are making it, because Vance Joseph didn't even have any coordinator experience when they hired him as the head coach. And we all know the backstory. There was that obsession, the one who got away, and then because we couldn't get him as defensive coordinator, and then 2 years later he became available, and it was almost like a done deal. Then he passed up with several other guys that went on to really good coaching careers. Hackett, you know, the more I learn about him, I didn't remember that he'd been the offensive coordinator in Jacksonville when he made Blaine Gabbert actually look like, you know, a deserving first-round quarterback, and they almost went to the Super Bowl. So that, to me, you know, he's got a lot more experience than Glenn does. You know, obviously, I think it was 3 or 4 years in Jacksonville and however long the tenure's been under LaFleur. So, you know, multiple years of coordinator experience, and I definitely see that. I'm interested that you don't hear it. Mike Kliss obviously has kind of gotten the reputation as a mouthpiece, kind of a propaganda piece for the front office, and Kliss actually came out and said that he was surprised that Doug Peterson doesn't appear to be one of their candidates. So we, you know, although we all said, oh, they didn't have to request permission, but at this point it doesn't look like he's on the list. So you've really got one guy on the entire list that's got experience. That maybe Quinn's a done deal, but that concerns me a little bit given, you know, what we've talked about and the lack of success that they've had with hot coordinators. And, you know, another guy that popped into my head that I'm amazed that they're not talking about is Todd Bowles. I really feel like Bowles did, it was not a Bowles thing with the Jets. It felt like an organizational thing, which is always the issue with the Jets. And then Raheem Morris, but not to be confused with Raheem Moore. But
we don't want to get
stoned on the streets today.
Why Raheem Moore to be getting bat that ball down? Do you want to be the Broncos head coach? Joel, what's wrong with you?
Yeah,
sniffing the white out?
You know,
what's
he's done
on?
A fantastic job as well.
Right.
So, but those are some guys with experience. And he's a guy that's long overdue. He actually did really well for a while with the Bucks, and then just kind of fell off. and another one that's a dynamic personality that, you know, his units have done well wherever he's been. Why isn't he getting more run as a head coach? I mean, there's a reason that he was the hot name for years, and then now all of a sudden the guy can't coach. I'm confused about that one as well. But I'd like to see more guys with legitimate experience, because we need some stability coming out of this another failed experiment with the, you know, a hot coordinator.
Yeah, right. Because Laka Forest said that Peterson was going to be on the Broncos list and the Vikings list, and so yeah, it is a little. If Kliss is accurate on that, that's surprising. That why wouldn't you talk to Peterson? I mean, wouldn't you bring him in? Maybe
he misread it. Maybe he had the same thought. You know, we all talked about it early in the week that, you know, you were the one that pointed it out, which was a great point, that you don't have to announce because the guy's not with anybody. You don't have to say anything about it. Maybe they're trying to keep it on the low, but it concerns me that there's not more run on these guys that have been successful head coaches that show they know how to run an organization. And, you know, I think George has obviously done a fantastic job with player eval. You know, you can debate whether he should have drafted a Mac Jones or a Justin Fields over Pat Surtain, but overall, when you look at the contributions the players have given, and, you know, that the scouting team to bring in some of these linebackers and no-name defensive backs over the course of the season to really fill gaping holes and fill them well, you know, I think he's done well there. So I'm going to trust the process for him as a head coach. I just would like to see a little bit more, you know, established leadership on that list than a lot of these guys that only have 1 or 2 years as a coordinator.
Right. And also, I do have a concern. You mentioned Cake, Nathaniel Hackett, and wanting the, you know, the stepbrothers thing with Luke Getsy to come and be his OC. If that indeed happens, wherever he ends up going, my concern is you've got to hire a guy, Joel, and I tend to think you probably agree with this, that's going to develop whoever you have a quarterback. And it can't be, because there's no guarantee that Aaron Rodgers is going to say, sure, I want out of here. I want to go play for Nathaniel Hackett and Luke Getsy. There's no guarantee that he's going to say that. We don't know what direction he's going to go. And to depend all your hopes, and I think George Payton's way too smart of a guy to do that. If you're going to hire Hackett, it better be to develop whoever you're going to get at quarterback. If it's Aaron Rodgers, who's going to be there, okay, there's no development, it's just the relationship continues. Or if it's Kenny Pickett, or it's Malik Willis, if you draft a guy, whatever happens, it has to be a guy that can run your football team and also play a role in developing whoever you have a quarterback. You can't pin all your hopes on that. If we get Nathaniel Hackett and Luke Getsy, then that guarantees that Rodgers is in Denver. I think that's some poor thinking on somebody's part, and I think George is too sharp a guy to go down that road.
No, I agree as well. But again, I think the big thing for Hackett is, you know, I mentioned it earlier, is Blaine Gabbert looked really good when Hackett was his offensive coordinator. I think that's a bigger endorsement than anything that Aaron Rodgers has done, because Aaron Rodgers is going to be Aaron Rodgers.
Blaine
looked like the guy that everybody thought he was going to be when they almost went to the Super Bowl, and then obviously fell off after that regime fell apart. So I think that to me is what's encouraging about a guy like that.
I'm sorry, you mentioned
guy with a lot of physical ability that needs groomed. So
yeah, I'm sorry, Joel.
I appreciate you guys. Okay. Have a great weekend.
All right, Joel. Thank you. Appreciate it. I think Joel meant Blake Bortles. He said Blaine Gabbert. I think he meant Blake Bortles.
Well, either way.
Yeah, either way. But
I mean, you're talking about a guy who had a great offensive coordinator, and then is now. And
Bortles, that he made Bortles a pretty competent quarterback for a brief period of time.
Yeah,
they were a play or two away from knocking off TB12 and the Patriots and going to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, can you imagine if that had been the Super Bowl matchup, Eagles and Jaguars?
Yeah,
I mean. Barf.
Yeah, and like when the Broncos hired Vance Joseph, he was the DC in Miami, and that was, he was there for 1 year,
and they
as
were,
the DC,
and they were what, 31st?
They
30th?
It can't be 31st. There's only 32.
like ranking wise though. Defensively, his defense ranked.
They were the
31st or 32nd.
Right. You said 35th, and I got confused.
I thought I said 31st, but okay.
Yeah, you said 35th, but that doesn't matter.
Either way.
Gosh, you can I'm sure I'll screw up something today, and you can feel free to correct me on it. Yeah, they were one of the worst defenses in the league. What you're saying is accurate. They were one of the worst defenses in the league. And then Denver hired him nonetheless.
Which, again, doesn't bode well.
No, it does not. And here's the interesting thing I just read.
Go ahead.
You know who's going to interview for the Dolphins job?
Is it Vance Joseph?
Vance Joseph.
Yeah, that doesn't shock me.
So you got some thoughts today on the Broncos coaching search. Send that to us today. Got your predictions for, can I say, Super Wild Card Weekend? Or are you going to come over here and smack me?
You do whatever. You do whatever.
Super Wild Card Weekend.
Super.
Thanks for asking. So, your picks for the weekend's NFL playoff games. I'll have pigskin picks. Now, you've crafted together.
I have.
You have spent a lot of time on this.
I'm very proud of this.
And I appreciate all the effort you put into this.
So, we've had, every week, we've had the NBC Grand Rando as part of our pigskin picks. And the math worked out to where there are 16 total randos, not including me, because I was a rando for 1 week, and I did horrible, and I'm also part of this little...
You're part of the show. You're part of the show.
So, there are 16 randos, and I have concocted a single elimination tournament of champions, if you will, and it'll work out to where when we get to Super Bowl weekend, there will be two randos left that will go head-to-head and be declared the grand poobah of all NBC grand randos for pile pigskin pickums.
And now the randos still have a chance. They're what's the overall standings like with myself and Petey and Buckeye?
Yeah, so funny you mention that, because the overall standings are kind of a mess in the nicest way possible, because there's a lot of ties, because you and the NBC Grand Rando Collective,
right,
are tied for first place.
Okay.
And then Rio and Petey are also tied for second and or last, respectively.
Okay.
And they're like two games back of you guys. So,
all right, so they're within striking distance.
Striking distance.
So I need to bring my A game today.
You do. And okay. I need to actually, that reminds me, I need to send Rio the picture this weekend.
Okay. So we'll have that coming up at 9:20 this morning. We'll also talk with Central girls basketball coach Mary Doan, off to their best start since Mary took over as the head coach at Central High School. So we'll talk with Mary Doan at 8:20 this morning. And also Byron Weehy will join us. Byron was the Mesa baseball coach for many, many years, and he'll be going into the Colorado Dugout Club Hall of Fame, along with his former pitcher, Joe White.
There was a baseball coach at Mesa not named Chris Hanks.
That would be accurate.
Wow.
Well, a guy named Bus Bergman.
Right.
The legendary Bus Bergman. And Byron's the one that took over for Bus, and Byron coached them to the NAIA playoffs every single year, took them to the NCAA postseason. The first year Mavs were eligible, moved to the NCAA Division II ranks. And he's going into the Colorado Dugout Club Hall of Fame. And so we'll be talking with him coming up at 9 o'clock this morning about his time at Mesa. He was coaching there when I was matriculating as a student at Mesa, and interviewed him many, many times when I worked for the school newspaper, the Criterion, and then worked with him, obviously, when I was doing broadcast stuff as well for the college radio station, and later from a professional perspective. So thrilled for Byron to get that chance to go into the Dugout Club Hall of Fame. So we'll talk with him coming up at 9 o'clock this morning. And we need to jump to what's going on.
What's happening?
All right, we'll start things out with last night. Denver Nuggets trying to regroup after blowing a 25-point second-half lead to the L.A. Clippers the other night and losing that game. Nuggets responded to Coach Michael Malone's tongue-lashing with a blowout home win over Portland last night. Nikola Jokic scored 20 points, pulled down 8 rebounds, and he had 7 assists in Denver's 140-108 win. Will Barton scored 21 to lead the Nuggets as Denver moves to 21-19, and they're 6th in the Western Conference standings. Malone loved what he saw from his team last night.
You know, we won every quarter, and we won the second half, I believe, for the first time since our game at New York in early December. So this was one of our more consistent 48-minute games that we've played probably all season.
Denver hosts LeBron James and the Lakers tomorrow night. In other Nuggets news, the trade of Bol Bol to Detroit was rescinded after Bol didn't receive medical clearance from the Pistons. The Nuggets had a deal to send Bol to Detroit in exchange for guard Rodney Magruder and would also get a second-round 2022 pick via Brooklyn. The Colorado men's basketball team still can't find a way to get a win in Tucson as the Buffs lost in number 6 Arizona last night. CU's KJ Simpson scored 17 points, but the Wildcats dumped the Buffs 78-55 at the McHale Center. CU's now 0-10 in Tucson since joining the Pac-12 in 2011. They have not won there since before Buffs voice Mark Johnson and myself were born.
Oh.
1960 was the last time they won in Tucson.
That was before my parents were born.
Exactly.
Oh.
It's been a long time. And the loss puts the Buffs at 11-4. They're now 3-2 in Pac-12 play. Another University of Colorado football player is heading to the transfer portal. Buffs running back Jerick Broussard is leaving Boulder after leading CU in rushing the last two seasons. Broussard was a Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Year in 2020, and thanks CU fans on social media, he is the 5th CU starter and the 18th Buffs player overall to leave the program through the transfer portal. Avs star Nathan MacKinnon will be the Central Division captain of the upcoming NHL All-Star Game in Las Vegas. It's MacKinnon's third All-Star Game appearance and the third time he'll be a captain. Colorado defenseman Cale Makar will also play in the All-Star Game, and Nazem Kadri is a candidate for the last man in fan voting. The All-Star Game is February 5th at T-Mobile Arena. The Avs take on Arizona tonight. The search is underway for new head football coach at Colorado Mesa. Jermaine Jackson is stepped down to go coach Valdosta State, Georgia. And one of the members of the search committee is Robin Brown, who's the CMU Foundation CEO and vice president at CMU for Development. Brown was on our show yesterday, gave some insight as to who's part of the search committee.
We have the core search committee, which will sift through the 70-plus resumes and applications that we have to kind of dial it down. And then we have a larger group of football alumni and people involved with the football program that will help us with the narrow that group further down.
Brown says among some of the items they're looking at in a new head coach includes knowledge of fundraising and a desire to be with the program for many years. They hope to announce the new head football coach sometime the early part of next month, hopefully right before National Signing Day. For Division II football programs. The Fruit of Monmouth girls basketball team faces a tough challenge tonight when they host the Delta Panthers in a non-league game. Fruit is 10-2 this season. Delta 6-1, led in scoring by Eric Akuta at 14 points per game. Delta, despite being a 3A program, has had success with Coach Cal Crowder, and Fruit head coach Michael Wells has a lot of respect for the Panthers program.
I have a ton of respect for Kyle. We played him twice last year, and they got us both times, and Kyle runs a really good program, and I think on the eastern side of the state, there's definitely some people that overlook him. Anyone who's engaged in what's going on over here knows what kind of program he runs and what kind of talent that they have.
Wildcats and Panthers play at Fruit of Monmouth tonight. Girls tip at around 5, boys at 6:30 for that one. Also tonight, both Palisade teams play at Steamboat Springs. And then both Palisade teams play at Eagle Valley tomorrow. Both the Grand Junction basketball teams are in Durango for Southwestern League play tomorrow. And the Colorado Mesa men's basketball team takes to the hardwood this weekend with a 6-game winning streak in hand. They lost to Metro State and Colorado Christian. They host Metro State and Colorado Christian with a chance to get some payback against the Roadrunners tonight in December. The Mavs' worst game of the season. They lost by 23 at Metro. Mavs head coach Mike DeGeorge says just saying you'll play better isn't going to cut it against the Roadrunners.
I thought it was our worst mental effort of the year and obviously the most lopsided defeat we've had. So, you know, it'll be a big challenge. And you can't go in saying, well, we weren't right, and we'll just take care of business now. I mean, they're a really good team. Us and them are clearly the two best defensive teams in the league.
You can hear the Maverick basketball teams on the Team CMU Sports Network tonight with women's pregame at 5:15. The men will tip it off at 7:30. And then tomorrow, the Maverick basketball games can be heard on 1100 KNZZ 92.7 FM with women's pregame at 5:15, men at 7:30. And a quick note, by the way, that Colorado Christian game is still on for tomorrow night with the Mavericks for the women, but their game at Westminster postponed due to COVID. So, but that was a Westminster situation where they postponed it. So there was another postponement, correct?
Yeah, and this is from the RMAC website. So CCU at Westminster, and then Saturday, Metro State and University of Denver, and their game against Westminster also postponed.
All right. So Maverick basketball on the team tonight on 1100 KNZZ tomorrow. Three Colorado Mesa swimmers and divers received RMAC weekly honors. Swimmer Lee Borgenheimer was named the Swimmer of the Week after winning both of her events last week. It's the third time she's won the award this season. Diver Noah Luna posted an NCAA qualifying and personal best score to win Diver of the Week. Jacob Trocher is the Swimmer of the Week after picking up his first collegiate win on the 1000. The CMU men are fourth in the nation. The Maverick women are fifth. And that's a look at
what's happening.
All right, Jim, along with Cake today. Don't forget, next hour, your chance to win with Where in the World is Tyler Franzen. That will be heading your way in the 8 o'clock hour. We'll also talk with Central coach Mary Doan about the outstanding start for her Warriors girls basketball team. We'll take a break and come back 7:25. Let us know what you think about the Broncos coaching search, your predictions on Super Wild Card Weekend. You can hear all those games on the team, by the way, starting tomorrow at 2 o'clock with the showdown between the Las Vegas Raiders and the Cincinnati Bengals. Text or call us, Chick-fil-A Breakfast Team phone line, 970-242-1340.
I'm the morning guy. I have a Facebook group, 16 members. Some call it a fan page. I don't know.
Oh, hell yeah.
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, The Team.
Welcome back. 7:29, Jim and Cake today. Chance to win New Belgian
beer. Piece of it.
Beer from High Country Beverage coming up with Where in the World is Tyler Franzen. That's next hour. All right, so text or call us. Predictions for Super Wild Card Weekend. Broncos coaching search. If you got some thoughts on that today, text or call us, 970-242-1340. And let's see. We got a couple leftovers from yesterday. One from Jolene over at CDOT. Good morning, Jolene. This is about the ownership situation.
Right.
We talked about there's six groups that are supposedly in play to bid on the Broncos. Now that the first right of refusal, that nonsense, the Edgar Kaiser thing got kicked to the curb.
You, and just real quickly on that, you would have thought that since both of those gentlemen, the late Edgar Kaiser and now the late Pat Bowlen, have since passed, you would think that wouldn't be an issue or the issue, but I guess we were wrong.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, yeah, that's now out of the way. The Bowlen family thing, that's no longer a roadblock in this, as far as at the moment, as far as we know.
But, you know, don't bet the farm.
But there's one ownership group that's allegedly going to be led by the Manning family and another one by John Elway. And we asked the question, who would you rather have end up? Because keep in mind that sentimentality plays no role in this.
No, it's business.
That you have to be able to put down, principal owner has to be able to put down 30% of the bid. So you've got to have some money behind you. You have to be insanely well heeled to make this happen, and the Mannings, with whoever's involved in their group, John Elway, whoever's involved in their group, they may not have enough cash to pull this off, because we're talking $3.5 billion with a B dollars.
And by the way, that's a sort of guesstimation valuation,
right?
But I've seen numbers as high as far as sale price, as $6 billion.
Yeah, there's possibility it could exceed, like you said, the $3.5 billion, which is kind of what it's valued at right now. I think that's where Forbes had it.
Yeah,
it could end up being much more than that. You're correct, and so it's, you know, there's been the rumor about Amazon founder Jeff Bezos,
which I don't know where that's coming from, other than just, hey, let's name a rich guy that everyone knows.
Because he's got the money to do it, and he's had a mild flirtation with buying a team before, and there seems to be more of a sense from him that Washington, if that became available, that the Admirals? Seahawks. No, the Admirals.
Oh, that Washington.
Not the Seahawks, but that the Washington football team would be one that he, because of owning the Washington Post, of that connection to the D.C. area, that would be more up his alley. That he'd have a greater interest in that than buying the Broncos. But his name's been linked. Jay-Z's name has popped up. Jay-Z, who had at one point ownership stake in the Brooklyn Nets and has went on and sold that.
And I was going to say, apart from that, with all due respect to Mr. Jay-Z, where the hell is that coming from? Where's that?
I don't know. But Jolene, when she texted in, she said, regarding the ownership situation, will the Manning stake make it easier/harder to draft his nephew in the draft
that.
4 years from now? Just curious.
Arch Manning, Denver Bronco, 2029. Let's go. Or 28, whatever.
You've got to look at that point in time. You know what? You have to hope, if you're the Broncos, you're not in a position to draft Arch Manning in four years.
Also true.
Come on, let's be honest. You don't want to be in position to draft him. And we're also making a lot of assumptions. He's going to go to college and be brilliant. The odds are he's going to be really good. The DNA, the bloodlines, the support system around him screams he's going to be maybe the top quarterback in the draft 4 years down the road.
Right.
But we don't know that. He could go to college and suck. He could go to college and blow out his knee and never recover from it. We don't know. We're making a lot of assumptions that Arch Manning, like I said, a lot of things clearly working in his favor to be really good, if not great.
Yeah.
But let's not put the cart before the horse here that Arch Manning is going to be just absolutely brilliant. Signs are good. A lot of positive things.
Right.
Let's pump the brakes a little bit. And if you're Denver, you don't want to be in that spot 4 years from now where he would be a guy that you could possibly draft. So, Jolene, I don't really have an answer on that. I don't know if the Mannings end up buying this team. I can't imagine that the Mannings or any of the ownership group they're involved in are going to be thrilled. Let's tank it for Arch and let's hang in there for the next, you know, 3-4 years.
Although, what if Arch pulls an Uncle Eli, gets drafted number one overall to whomever, and says, I'm not going to play, I'm going to get traded.
That could be the case. I mean, that's entirely possible that he pulls, you know, after he plays from the playbook or takes a play from the playbook of Uncle Eli and says, no, I'm not going to go to Jacksonville.
Chargers? No. Jacksonville? No. Texans? No.
No. Look, that could happen. That could very well happen if the Mannings end up buying the team. That you could say, whoever drafts, I'm not going there. You're going to trade me to Denver, or I'm not going to play.
And that, by the way, wouldn't be the first time a Broncos quarterback was acquired, because that's how we got John Elway.
That's how Broncos got, yeah, that great quarterback class of 83. Colts draft him?
Nope.
John and his dad? Nope, not going to play for Frank Kush. Not no, but hell no. Hard no. Not going to happen. Not going to play for that guy.
You're either going to trade me or I'm going to go play baseball.
Yeah, I'm going to play for the Yankees. Which, maybe it would have turned out to be a fruitful baseball career.
Wouldn't that have been something?
Had, you know, certainly good enough talent to be drafted by the Yankees and was in their minor league system. But I think the football thing worked out a whole lot better for the Duke of Denver.
I think it did too.
Worked out pretty good. All right, so Nuggets last night after a big bounce back game after they blew that 25-point second half lead in the loss to the Clippers the other night. Michael Malone was livid. He was not happy about how his team played.
I wouldn't be either.
And so Denver took to heart the tongue lashing that he gave them. As the Nuggets, they jumped out early. They outscored the Blazers 41-28 in the first quarter. They go on to win it 140-108 last night. Outstanding game by some guy named Nikola Jokic. Once again, great all-around game. Yeah, just your reigning MVP. That's all. Nothing else. 20 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists. Good numbers, but not great Nikola Jokic numbers. But guess what? He didn't have to be great last night.
And this is what we've been screaming as Nuggets fans. You need, you need Nikola Jokic to do well because he's the best player on your team. You want the best player on your team to succeed.
Well, the best players in the league.
But you also want there to be some balance where he's not literally carrying the entire weight of the team on his back. And so last night, that was what you saw. You saw the rest of, you know, Campazzo gets a double-double off the bench. Bones Highland has a great performance. The rest of the team around him comes to play, and this is where I get a little excited as a Nuggets
fan. I can tell
you're
giddy.
A little giddy because it's, again, it's the when the Nuggets are at full strength or at close to full strength, they're virtually unstoppable.
When they play good defense, when they don't turn the ball over. Because the other night, they blew the 25-point lead by. They stopped defending, particularly three-point range, and they took had bad shot selection. And last night, they scored, what, it was a season high, like 42 in the paint?
Insane.
It was like the NBA dunk contest last night. Everybody was throwing one down. That fat, sloppy Nikola Jokic.
300 pounds.
Well, Keith Morris likes to call him. Throwing it down last night. That's his words, not mine. I love Nikola Jokic.
He's
or
great.
Keith Morris, jerk. Anyway, Aaron Gordon. I mean, they were just throwing down dunks left and right in the paint last night as the Nuggets just, you know, curb stomp the Portland Trailblazers last night. You mentioned Bones Highland, who Mike Malone said in the postgame, he said when they were on the flight back from L.A., he's like, hey, I took the time to talk to him and say, look, you know, you've been through rough stuff in your life.
Right.
And we need you, and I'm kind of paraphrasing what Malone said here, we need to see that toughness here. You can't get your daubers down when you have a bad game. You've got to become more of I want you to score, shoot the ball, but you also need to be a facilitator as well. You've got to find open guys. You've got to make that extra pass. You've got to do those things. We need you to not play like a rookie.
Right.
And because he's, I know you're capable of playing better than what he did against the LA Clippers the other night.
Right.
And he certainly delivered on that last night for the Nuggets. You referenced that. Highland last night was a 17 points, played great. Facu Campazzo, don't need him to score a ton. They need him to distribute. He did that last night. 12 assists, and he scored. He had 18 points. They did more from Will Barton. They got that last night. 21 points from Will. 19 from Jeff Green.
Uncle Jeff getting involved.
Uncle Jeff. You know, Aaron Gordon, they wasted a great performance the other night. He only scored 5 points last night, but he got in the glass. He had 8 rebounds. He contributed last night to the Nuggets' effort. But here's Michael Malone, some post Malone from Coach Michael, on not blowing a big lead against the Blazers.
I think everybody who's a Nuggets fan was probably wondering when we got up big, when the collapse was going to happen, and give our guys credit. We won every quarter, and we won the second half, I believe, for the first time since our game at New York in early December. So this was one of our more consistent 48-minute games that we played probably all season.
All right, and he also praised the bench a lot. We mentioned what Bones Highland did with 17, Campazzo, 18 points, 12 assists. They really contributed. Zeke Nnaji, 16 points last night.
How about that?
And the area that, you know, this is something that warms the cockles of one Michael Malone's heart.
Right.
Guys that play defense. And Zeke Nnaji was that guy.
You know, he got defensive player of the game, 16-9, shot the ball well, being really disciplined, playing with great confidence. You know, we scored 66 off the bench, and it was fun to watch those guys play extended minutes in that second half.
And Nnaji had the 9 boards to go along with the 16 points. Nuggets host the L.A. Lakers and LeBron James tomorrow night.
We'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, if they play like they did, because this is where I think there's also some issue with the Nuggets, is you have a game like last night. And look, let's not kid ourselves. Portland was down, what, 4? Guys, like 4 key guys last night, so they were not anywhere near full strength. But you have a game like last night where you drop 140 on your opponent and you go, all right, cool, sweet, we're right where we want to be, and then you go and then you kind of let your guard down a little bit. That's where I'm a little concerned.
And that's what Michael Malone talked about. He said, we'll have a stretch where we play like absolute garbage in a second half and lose a game like they did to the Clippers. And then we bounce back nicely and win three or four games in a row. And it's just, he was like, if we lose a game and play well in the second half, just if they just make more shots and play better than us, I can live with that. I can't live with us out getting outworked and outsmarted.
Right.
And that was kind of the situation with the LA Clippers game the other night. So Nuggets have LeBron and the Lakers tomorrow. The Avalanche, they're at home tonight taking on Arizona. Arizona's eighth in the Central right now, 8-23-3. The Avs 22-8-3. Avs have been they're 13-4-1 against Western Conference opponents. And the Avs have scored 142 goals. They lead the league in goals per game at 4.3. And Nazem Kadri, boy, he's had a sensational season, maybe his best season. He ranks fourth in the league with 48 points. He scored 13 goals. He has 35 assists. He has been red hot, along with, well, Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar. Mikko Rantanen, he only has 16 goals. That's it. That's all he's done. And by the way, I should mention, I think I had this in What's Happening, that they announced the NHL All-Star Game, which is going to be at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas on February 5th. Congratulations to Nathan MacKinnon. He's the Central Division captain, and it's the third All-Star Game appearance for Nathan MacKinnon. Third time he'll be an All-Star captain. The only other guy to be an All-Star captain for the Avalanche, can you tell me who that was?
I'm just going
to
throw out a guess and say Sakic.
Joe Sakic, excellent guess. Colorado defenseman Cale Makar will also play in the All-Star Game. Nazem Kadri, a candidate for the last man in fan voting. So,
and Jared Bednar, a coach.
Yeah, so congratulations to the Avalanche, and hopefully Nazem Kadri gets in. All right, 744, and what, you get something? Go ahead.
Well, real quick about the Avalanche, I got a call from Sam and Fruta, just had a question. If we were carrying the Avs Monday, they play at 1 o'clock. It's not on our schedule. I'm guessing since we have NFL playoffs at 5:30, but I did not know they played at 1 on Monday.
Yeah, they play at 1, and with a running up against the pregame start.
It's right on the edge.
Yeah, Sam will take a look at that. We'll see, because initially the plan was, because if it's going to run up that close, we particularly on a holiday,
right,
it makes it a challenge to deal with some of those issues. So, as of right now, at the moment,
if there's not going to be anybody in the building to fix it, that's where we have.
Because we are off on Monday, by the way. Should let people know that. If we were in the building, it'd be obviously a different story. But we will give that some examination. But as of the moment, we'll just have that Monday night showdown between the Rams and the Cardinals to wrap up a Super Wild Card Weekend.
Super Wild Card Weekend.
Yes, I like the way you do that. That's good. I like that.
Even if it is slightly mockish.
It's all right. Just a little bit. What? We never mock anything or anyone on this program.
Never.
All right, time for sound check.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Speaking of things we never mock, ever. UCLA and Oregon basketball last night, Pac-12 on ESPN, can only mean one thing. Bill Walton.
Conference of Champions.
Bill Walton says something dumb. This is Walton on the transfer portal, except that's not what he calls it.
So the Tinder portal, which has been very good for the Conference of Champions, and with Miles Johnson seeing the opportunity that UCLA does not have a shot blocker, he comes here and says, yeah, I found myself a home.
You mean the transfer portal? You called it the Tinder portal.
Tinder portal, yeah.
Why, you're saying that the transfer portal is like Tinder? Where you swipe right or left to get a player?
Well, do you love me today?
Williams missed the three.
I'll be honest, I love that. It's a Tinder portal.
Once again, I reiterate.
Oh, that's an attractive-looking shooting guard. Oh, that's a good-looking quarterback.
Once again, I reiterate, Dave Pasch has one of the hardest jobs in broadcasting.
Not easy.
Having to work alongside Bill Walton.
It's not easy. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back, and we'll bring back some of our conversation with Antonio Clark, former Maverick All-America cornerback and also a part of the Carrick's News Channel 5 team, talking about some of the possible coaching candidates for the CMU football team. And that vacancy, we'll have that next on the Jim Davis Show.
Yeah, I think they're like the best on the radio.
At least at the pro level, the best of the best.
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado sports leader, The Team.
Welcome back. Jim and Cake today, the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network. Get us your predictions for Super Wild Card Weekend. Also on the Broncos coaching search, got some thoughts on that today. Chick-fil-A Breakfast Team phone line, 970-242-1340. Colorado Mesa in the middle of trying to hire a new football coach. Recently, we talked with Antonio Clark, former All-America cornerback for the Mavericks, also a member of the KRX News Channel 5 team, getting his thoughts about who might replace Tremaine Jackson at CMU. Great to have you in studio today.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor. It's always an honor to talk to you on the radio. I love it.
Oh, wow.
I remember doing it in my playing days.
Greasing the skids.
I looked forward to it. I looked forward to it during my playing days. I'm like, is Jim going to call me this week?
Wow. All this flattery. I'm getting a little flushed here.
Only guy on the show today that'll do it.
No doubt about that. I know that's truly the case. So take us through kind of how you feel about where things are. I know you expressed some opinions on it over on KRX News Channel 5, being a former player, because you have a unique perspective on this. You played for Russ Martin. I played on the team that went to the playoffs. I remember you with your injured your arm, fracture during that loss to Commerce, and on the plane flying home, a game you guys should have won, and they went on to win the national championship that year. But your thoughts, your feelings, being a former player, like I said, unique position to kind of comment on this about the departure of Tremaine Jackson.
I can't act like I'm surprised. I kind of thought that this was kind of, you know, like a jumping off point for him to get to a higher level, which you can't be mad at the guy for doing that. My only problem was just how he kind of sold himself. He sold himself to the community as this was a destination dream job to have. And in reality, he was really looking to get another job. I think if he was just a little bit more honest, I don't think I'd have such a problem with it. But my biggest takeaway is just I feel really bad for the players. There's a lot of guys that he brought in, you know, young guys too. You know, guys like Karst.
Right. freshman player of the year.
And yeah, his coaching staff is gone. Like, he had to have trusted and believed in this coaching staff a lot to even come here to transfer from South Dakota.
Right.
So, you know, I feel really bad for the players more than anything, but I can't act like I'm very, very surprised by the departure, if I'm being honest.
So you felt early on that if he was here a couple of years, that and my feeling initially with Tremaine was a little bit like how you felt. I was giving him a little bit longer, you know, span of time to be here. I thought 5 years. Mm-hmm. I thought within 5 years he would have some success here and then he would move on someplace else. So I don't think either one of us were entirely shocked by this decision. For you, say you're still on this football team, what would be the thing or things you'd be looking for in the next head coach?
Just a guy that I know is committed to being here, a guy that truly wants to be here, and he wants to build this program into what it can be. This program is a sleeping giant. It's we were very close. We were on the cusp of, you know, realizing the potential of this school and the program. We obviously didn't get there in the teams I played with, but it's still right there. Like, you saw him this year. It's on the cusp. I think the guys are just looking for somebody that they know isn't looking as at CMU as an opportunity to further their career, somebody that wants to come here and wants to be here.
And the name has been brought up, and one of our diehard listeners, who goes by the name Die Hard Keith, because he loves the film Die Hard.
Christmas classic
sure Die Hard. Is. He brought up Miles Cochaver, and I don't know if you're very familiar with Miles or not. Miles played at Fruita Monument. He went on to play at Colorado State. He was a defensive back for the Rams.
DC at Pueblo right now?
DC at CSU Pueblo. Has been at Humboldt State. I think he was at West Texas A&M for a little bit. He was on the Mesa staff several years ago. And so, young guy that's not quite 40 yet, mm-hmm. who's had a lot of experience, has ties to this area, this he grew up here, mm-hmm. that would a guy like that make some sense for you as a player? A guy that's a younger guy, not quite 40, and a guy that does have ties to this area that would probably certainly be more likely to stay here 8, maybe 10 years coaching the Maverick football team.
Absolutely. I think that's the ideal candidate. When I talked about this on the news, I said that's the thing I'd be looking for. To some people's misgivings, some people didn't like it, but I would lean towards a younger guy. You know, this is a new generation of football player. Recruiting is not the same as it was even when I was in high school, coming out in 2012.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a completely different ball game. So I think having a guy that's more in tune with the young player and what they want out of a coach is definitely ideal. And then the ties to the community, I think that's the big one. Somebody that really cares about the Western Slope. You know, the Western Slope invests a lot into the Mavericks, and you want somebody that's willing to invest right back into the community. I think he's an ideal candidate. And another guy that I don't know if this name's been mentioned, but he kind of fits that same prototype, a younger guy, below 40, that's had a lot of experience, has coached at Mesa, even played at Mesa, is Mac Alexander.
Oh, yeah.
Mac Alexander played here.
Former Montrose Indian.
Former Montrose Indian, played at Mesa, had his career cut short due to injury on the football field, but then played basketball at Mesa.
Right.
Coached at Mesa. He was my DB's coach. You know, he went on, he had got some D.C. experience at Fort Lewis for a year in 2018, my senior year. Then he went on to Tarleton and was under Coach Patton. Coach Patton, I don't know if people know who Coach Patton is. I think Coach Patton is the catalyst behind the whole Mesa revolution.
Yeah, I thought Coach Patton did an outstanding job when he was the D.C. for Coach Martin. I thought that the defense had their had struggles after he left.
Yeah.
And I thought he did a sensational job when he was here. I totally agree with you on that.
So getting that experience at Tarleton under Coach Patton, and then just this past year, he's been doing special teams at Washington State. So he has big, big-time experience. He's been across the country. So his recruiting would be good, too. He can recruit across the country, but he's also a Western Slope guy. But I think you have the perfect candidate in mind. A younger guy that's, you know, invested in the community, has some ties to it. I think that's the perfect candidate.
Right. Somebody that, like you said, has the connection here. That's young, that's not, the next job is not on the horizon for them.
Mm-hmm.
And like with Coach Jackson, I do not mean to disrespect him in any way, because I enjoyed our relationship and feel like he did a ton of positive things both on and off the field here in the community. But it's not somebody that's looking for that next job. And, you know, he was at the University of Houston football practice over the Christmas break.
The writing was on the wall.
That's where some of this started, and I think the issue of the program not being fully funded, I think that was an issue with Coach Martin, because Coach Martin and I talked about that on a couple of different occasions, and even going back to when Coach Romano was there, that's always been a problem for whoever comes in.
Absolutely.
That you're fighting against programs like mine's and CSU Pueblo that are fully funded.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so there's Antonio Clark. We enjoyed our conversation with him. You can always find it at our website, theteam1340.com, to catch the rest.